session number 14788, rule 13.
Mr. Parker, rule 13. Now, you were at Stalag 4B. How did you actually get on with the Germans? I mean, you said that it was an efficient camp, but how did you get on with the guards as guards and as people?
Well, we didn't see many guards. I mean, very few. I mean, they just keep behind the scenes. I mean, all these tales about them being vicious I didn't find it, so. Because if you've got your own sergeant major, you ruin the camp. It would ruin the camp like an army unit, so there's no need for the Germans to, you know.
What about the food? Was that any better than the Italian food had been?
Oh, yeah. They were well organised altogether. Food, hygiene, games, you know.
Did you play any football? You'd started a cup in Italy. Did you play football?
No. Well, I wasn't there long enough.
How long were you there for, then?
February to March. I mean, then and there were about 6 weeks.
What was your next move?
No, 4 weeks. I went to a place called Penig.
How do you spell that?
P-E-N-I-G. That was 4F.
Stalag 4F.
4F. I was in a paper factory there.
In the what, sorry?
Making paper.
Was it a work camp then?
Oh yeah, work camp.
How was the camp organised at Penig?
This Penig place. Well, we were in there's about 40 of us. And we were in a public place, you know, like this, but I mean bigger. Not a brick place, not a hut like the other places have been. Proper big brick place. And the factory was about 200 yards alongside a canal. You just go from there along the canal to the... Well, it's quite a big place. I mean, we worked in the factory.
What were you actually doing in the factory? What was your work like?
Well, we had various jobs. The first job I had was working on the print machine itself. I didn't like that because it was too hot.
What did you have to do?
I don't know whether you've been in a paper factory before. But it was a long machine. I think, 150, 200 yards long. And the strange thing being that the first job I ever had was on the pulp machine. That's from the trees coming in from the factory. There was sort of all the bark was taken off, like a skimmer machine. I don't know what they call it, but it had a name for it. And then say a tree came in, would say be as high as this. It was cut down. Then our first job was to cut it into sections, which went onto a rubbing machine, and you had a piece like that size.
About 2 foot.
Yeah. And they weren't sort of big trees in width, sort of that.
About 8-9 inches.
Yeah. And they would go in this rubbing machine, and there's like sections to pop the... If you could imagine like a big wheel, there was a gap where you could put a piece of timber in, go around to the next one, and till it was all filled up. And then this machine would go round, and inside would be a rubber, like a stone, I don't know what you'd call it. Well, if you can imagine the end rubbing, that was going around like that, that's a piece of timber, and this was going around, it was rubbing that wood pulp, and it came out the other end as a piece of wood pulp as big as that. And then when you got it to a certain sort of width or depth, you had a sort of guillotine, and you could pull a handle and chop it off. So eventually you finished up with a big stack of, well, basically wood pulp. And then from that would go into the factory, and you'd make paper from that with various things, the chalk and all kind of thing. And they went into a hopper, like that sort of shape, you know. And basically,
funnel, like a funnel shape.
That's right, yeah. And that was like almost like you know, if you're baking a cake and you got the old, not the dough itself, I mean that's too thick, but in liquid form. And then this would come onto a machine, and it was so hot, these pipes underneath, that eventually it would solidify and come out the other end. It might take it a long process, because you should have to go through these rollers, and that is sort of, I don't know how it's doing, but well, imagine a piece of paper we've got like that. That would start out as a piece of wood from one end, go through that machine to make it into pulp, then come into the factory and you'd have it into like this big cylindrical thing, which would be like just water, and it would come out to the end as paper. That would take about what, half an hour.
And you did several jobs in this?
Well, you'd either work on the machine itself. Well, on the machine itself, you've got various jobs, because you're thinking of about 200 yards. That end is talking about not paper, and this end is paper. And you used to have to oil the machines, and I didn't use a lot of heat because the heat was terrible. I suppose you've got to have heat to do the processing of the paper. And when it came out, it's strange to follow it, just putting a piece of sort of like milk into a tumbler at one end and coming out at the end of paper, it was magic. But I could never understand it. And when it first came, started coming as paper through this succession of rolls, the first thing you had was a deck. Well, say that pipe, that was sort of going lateral, long ways. You had three things like that, they were metal. The paper came onto those, and they were onto a little gantry. And they were one, two, three. So when the paper started coming out, you had to grip the paper, then turn it so it went onto these. Imagine, you know, like a toilet roll. If you look in the end, that's how it is. It's like a tube, isn't it? And that's how you start your paper. And when it got to a certain height, you have to break the paper and take it onto your next roll. And if you're a big horn bloke like Palamine was, Scotch Guardsman, and he was in charge of the machine, the Germans couldn't keep up with it because it was that fast. You should break the paper and take it on the next roll. You'd have to see these things to, you know, imagine. You?
And were you supervised by German guards while you were doing it?
Oh, no. But when you did your work, I mean, there's no, you were your own boss.
Did you ever think of sabotaging what was going on? Or putting a spanner in the works?
Not really, no. I mean, you're so minute a man that it's not like being sort of Superman or... In one or two cases, I mean, you can sabotage in your own little way, but you only got cane for it, so... I mean, I did it a couple of times, and that was it.
What would you do? Or what did you do, the two terms?
Well, I mean, I was put in the cookhouse once and to peel potatoes. It's a small, silly thing, but I used to finish a big potato about, say, you know, as big as that. You used to finish it like a cube. So the Germans thought I was sabotaging their rations, which I was, basically. And you either got a whack back of your head or back of your... I had one at the back of my back and almost broke my back.
So it wasn't worth it?
No, in the end, I mean, it wasn't like sort of sabotaging a railway or something like that. I mean, big, I mean, you could do small things. And, I mean, I went to various, what they call concentration camps, as opposed to a stalag. Yeah.
When was that?
This was later on.
We'll come to that then. So, were there many German civilians in the factory?
Oh yeah.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, all right. Cause, I mean, I had an old boy about 65. I used to have to do one job on a lift, affects the stores, like, and he would say when the lift was in motion, he'd give me an apple or a bit of cake or something like that. He'd say, you know, don't
tell him. Your mum in shush, yeah.
And he was about 65, good as gold.
How long were you there then at the paper factory?
Well, about one of the longest stints I had. Right up until, that was almost a year there. March to the Christmas.
Anything else you remember about that time there then?
Before? Oh, being in a paper factory, it was like, no crepe paper. Ordinary crepe paper. Well, all this came in as a sort of fodder for making the... they were making blinds. It wasn't posh paper. It was sort of, well, for blinds. They'd got stacks of... and we used to use that for making decorations for Christmas. Because I was there till Christmas time. And we made dresses out of it and all kinds of things. And all the blokes were tarted up. In the barrack one night, we were sort of billeted, they got half the blokes dressed up as women and half the dressed up as men. We were having a real rumsumming. In the canteen, we were allowed £1 a week pocket money. That was a pound in those days was a pound, not like I get a pound today. That was marks we used to get.
What would you spend it on? And where would you spend it?
Well, on the canteen, they got toothpaste and little bits of milk. We had choice of two types of beer, you know, light beer and dark beer. And the gaffer in charge was, he'd say, you could only have dark beer. And we said, well, we were the same as you, we were the same hours, and so we should have one of each, same as you do. Because the light beer was quite good, and the dark beer was like Dandine and Burdock. And the bloke was in charge, you know how you see them on the telly, where they have the old big armband with a swastika on? Well, he used to dress up like that, his armband. We just called him the Fuhrer. And he said, oh no, he said, prisoners are prisoners, said, they should not have. Same as the German civilian. So I said, well, we'll stop working. So we started to boycott the work. And of course, they knew that 30% or 50% of the work was being done by prisoners. And in some cases, probably a lot more. And in the end, they capitulated and said, right, you can have in their German way, one licht and one dunkel. That was dark beer and light beer. And us being in Saxony, the German accent is very soft. So when you say ich, you know German at all. Ich bin so and so. Well, in there it's ish, sort of softer. And we say, well, when the Russians come, you, and they'll frighten the death of the Russians. They'll frighten.
Any more stories about your time there before you left in December?
No, one thing, there was very hard winters, because you get good summers and hard winters. And, I always remember looking out, and when the nippers were going to school, even at 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, they used to go on skis, little skis. In the boiler house, there was a big stack of coal. Of course, when the stove came, it was like a mountain. So one of the blokes who worked with us, he was a young bloke, he was exempt from the army because he'd lost three fingers in a sort of boating accident or something. And he said, I'll bring my skis tomorrow, but said, you can have a go on them. And I said, we've got a ski. He said, up there. Pointed this big stack of coat. And he went up sideways and, have you ever tried skiing? And he did it, showed me how to do it like, and then I went up and I had a go, mind you. But if you don't know what you're doing, you probably break your leg or break your arm. But that was fun. It was very, very cold. I remember, you know the Lean, the river down there, where the, a small river like that would freeze over in the night and you could walk over the next day. I remember that. It's cold, very cold.
So what was the next move then? That was.
Well, if you remember, I talked about these making these logs for the. Well, you used to have a saw with a double-handed saw. There's two hands to saw that end, and a bloke that end, and he saw through the log, and then there's another bloke. It's hard to explain, but if you got underneath the log, you had to pry the log up to open it up. So you get yourself right. And we used to tell the bloke to not prize it up and used to break the bloody saws. So automatically we were all down the guns kaput. And that, we're doing that regularly, then I got sent to a punishment camp. That's what I'm coming on to now.
Now which punishment camp were you sent to?
I was in a quarry. There was no sort of name to it. It was a quarry near Bergstadt.
How do you spell that? B.
B R G S T A D T.
And where's that near? Or do you not know? Or which province?
Well, in a roundabout way, it couldn't be very far from Colditz.
And. So you were sent there for breaking these
saws.
Were you punished in any other way?
No, no.
And what was the camp like at Bergstadt?
It was a quarry. A big hole in the ground. Steinbrook, they called it.
Old?
Steinbrook.
How do you spell that?
S-T-E-I-N, that's Stein, stone. And Brook, B-R-U-C-K. Steinbrook.
And where were you accommodated?
In like a ordinary barrack room on the site. It was terrible there.
How many were there?
I was thinking now about 150, I think.
And what was the routine? Why was it so terrible?
Why it was so terrible? Now, imagine your job now. Imagine this very little food. Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning when it was dark and having to work on a. There's a little diagram. But a cliff face. Well, the bloke used to go up and fire the face. We used to take cover there by the time it. When we'd come back, all the stone he'd fetch down, we would have to collect. Now imagine. Pushing a skip, metal skip, and you don't forget your prisoners of war, you're not sort of well built, at least there's all kinds of people that were ill even. But pushing a big metal skip up a sort of railway to the face of where the rock's been, I think it'd be about a good quarter of a mile before you started loading stone. The object of the exercise was when the bloke had fired the cliff face, you got to load the stone into this metal skip, bring it down on the railway, down to a bloke at the bottom, who was an old boy, and he would take it on like a hurdy-gurdy round to the, what they call the hopper, where all the bricks went in. Now for one skipper, he'd get one ticket. If it was what all brick, then he could say, right, it's all brick, and get one ticket. If it was a mixed, like stone and rubble, because don't forget when you blast the face, not all big boulders, and we used to prop the bottom of the skip with a piece of wood and load rubble on the top and bricks down below. Of course, you get two tickets for that. Well, that went on for about two or three weeks until they found out that the bloody apple was full of rubbish and not bricks. Difficult to explain. But
when you say bricks, what do you mean?
When you knock a face down, when you say bricks, I mean, they're not all little pieces of the stone, like the prisoner in the old films.
You just mean rocks when you're saying bricks?
Yeah, rocks. But some of them were really big rocks. You could bigger that chair. Imagine trying to lift them into a skip.
But how did your health stand up to that sort of work?
Well, I lasted all right, but I wasn't sick or ill, because they're going a bit sort of easy on them, because they knew they were losing the war. So the people who'd been there before told us that if you didn't do your skip, or you fill your skip, and you say you've got to do 10 tickets a day, that's like 10 skips, or 14, and you'd got a target. If you didn't do those for the accepted time when you came in, you have to go back after dinner to finish them. And people that had been there before was told they'd been out till midnight. So basically you're working almost day and night to do your job. But with the war being getting closer, they're a bit lenient with us, so we didn't do too bad. This old boy with us, I mean, he couldn't fathom us out, because he used to go down there and say, "V feel," which how many, you know? So we used to say two or four. And we'd say, no. What about your mate? I mean, he thought I was saying for myself. So I said, no, between two of us. I said, we've done four stone, and we do two rubble. So we want six tickets. And if you're on 14 tickets a day, that means you've got 2 hours of this bloody railway thing, and you could not too bad coming back, because you could ride back. But imagine sort of pushing. He pushed the wagon up, and one bloke turned his table round, he went that way, that was his stint. Another bloke went up, that was his stint. We were the last stint. So imagine we got all bloody work to do, pushing this barrel up there. Hard work. And when we came in, the food was not clever. 5 o'clock started, you got a cup of coffee, ersatz.
What was that like?
Crap. Well, it was acorns ground up. And
did it taste anything like coffee at all?
No. It was acorns. They told him it's acorns. I mean, they were short of coffee. When he got a coffee from home, he could tell the difference. But parcels get a bit few and far between. Mainly, it was a 5 o'clock start in the morning. He was getting a mug of coffee, which is ersatz coffee. That was the German coffee. And then at midday, about 12 o'clock, we'd get a little bit of soup and a small amount of bread, probably a slice. I mean, they used to have cobs like they did in Italy. Then night time, we'd get potatoes, cabbage, and a bit of meat. And usually, the blokes who were really hungry, they would collect all the peelings from the other boats and say thank you very much. And we're issued with uniforms which had probably been pinched off the Russians, because if you look down the quarry from a distance, they all look like Russians rushing about. I know mine was green with fancy buttons. It was very, very cold. I mean, we're talking about January 45 then. And I had a sort of a stovepipe which ran past my bed. I just go to sleep with my hands over the top of it to keep warm. But one day, we found people running about, and we found out later that they were youngsters being trained to go to the Russian front. And they got big white anoraks on, and we found out that all the old men were on duty, like looking after us. And these were youngsters about 13, 14, 15, going to the Russian front. And they were training in the quarry. Got these big sort of anoraks on, and only youngsters. And one day, I said, we're in the barrack room, and they said, listen, we can hear gunfire. And we said, no, I don't think so. He said, no, you put your head down and listen. And they got a rifle fire. You know, it was very persistent. And we thought, well, we'd heard rumours that the Americans were coming through. And lo and behold, the next day, they took us to a tunnel outside the camp where the railway is coming to collect the stone. And they took us in there. I always remember there was a big bang. And apparently they burned the bloody train lines up. And they were trying to blow all the railway lines up to stop the Americans coming through. And the Russians were coming through on one side, and the Yankees were coming through on the other side. And I found out we're in an area where the 1,000 bomber raids were between Leipzig and Dresden. We were in that area, and well, we're not very far from Czechoslovakia. So we knew then that the war was getting a bit closer.
When how did you feel?
I feel highly delighted, because the next thing we knew, I was out of the camp and away. Well, I mentioned previously that we thought it was their coldest. And this is all hearsay, because you get sort of things through the grapevine that somebody, well, probably the German might say so and so, and the girls say something else. It filters through to the blokes, and then by the time it gets to the blokes, it's probably distorted, but you know something was happening. And well, we had this rifle fire, but I said, well, what are we going to do? So then you have a bit of a beating, and you get somebody that's a bit probably bolder than another, and he'll say, well, how about nipping off? Because the Germans didn't seem too worried about keeping us in the camp. And I said, well, all right, we'll cross this little stream. And it's almost like a lean. You could wade across it, probably about sort of that high, just high.
Less than that.
Mm, yeah. And we walked about a couple of miles. And
how did you get out of the camp? Or out of the quarry and the barrack, the hut?
Well, there's no sort of wire up like a prisoner war camp. It's like going to work in the quarry. I mean,
so you just walked out?
Just walked out.
Sorry, that. Carry on then.
And we walked about 2 miles, and first thing, a bloke shot out of a dugout and said, "Halt!" I said, straight away you say, we're prisoners of war, Kriegsgefangene, yeah? Because they thought it might be Germans, and you don't know who there was. And the bloke who stopped me was an Italian-American, or American-Italian, whichever way you want it. And he'd come over, as he thought, to Europe to fight the war for the Americans, the Yankees. And he said, well, we're just a raiding party. He said, our HQ is about 4 miles away. He said, best thing you can do is to make your way down there and sorted out the bloke in charge. He said, the commander. He said, and see where you go from there.